This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Joining us, hour three. We've got a good hour for you, NFL. We're going to go over all of the games. Kind of give you our value of each game, what to watch for, what to not watch for, whether we like the matchup or not. That's coming up. We're going to do our early games, later games, whatnot. But we're going to start this hour on a Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, round out your protection with life, phone, and pet health insurance. Austin Gale joins us from The Ringer. How are you, Austin?
Doing fantastic. How about yourself?
Thank you. Let's get to the Lions last night. I don't want to ever get hyperbolic this early in the season, but if the Lions crossed over into that point now, you should expect them to win or at least be competitive. They're no longer the lovable losers. This going forward, this should be a very, very formidable team.
I think so. I think where they've won, right, I think it starts with Dan Campbell. You get a coach that players want to play for. And that's beyond all the scheme stuff and what everyone is talking about with Mike McDaniel and Kyle Shanahan and even Matt LaFleur. Like, what those coaches do for your offenses schematically is such an edge. But when you get a coach that players want to play for, it changes everything. It's a huge motivator, and it forces the situation where Detroit is a players want to play. Then you hire an offensive coordinator like Ben Johnson, who's been in the rumors for head coaching for a while now because of his offensive design. From there, build in the trenches. Aleem McNeil, Aiden Hutchinson on the offensive line, Penei Sewell, Jonah Jackson, Frank Ragnow, Taylor Decker, building from the trenches in the embodiment of Dan Campbell, allows for a team that, with Jared Goff, who is arguably a top 16 to 20 quarterback on a talent perspective in the league, to win and play well at this position.
Now, on the flip side of that, let's go to the Packers. I know it's a little early in Love's career to really fully evaluate him, and Rodgers went 6-10 the first time he started for that team. But what are you seeing from the Packers? Is this a team just too much injuries to really get an evaluation? What have you noticed about Jordan Love?
I think it's a combination of injuries and just youth. I honestly think this is one of the youngest teams in the NFL right now, and one of the youngest teams over the last 10 years at all of the major positions as well. I also feel injuries along the offensive line showed up last night, and the Detroit Lions defensive line is so deep. Aiden Hutchinson obviously gets a lot of love on the broadcast, former number two overall pick, but Aleem McNeil is getting back there. Charles Harris is getting back there. Like, they have so much depth along that defensive line that when you go against an offensive line that has injuries, I know John Runyon left that game with an injury, maybe came back. Like, that makes things very difficult to run the football. I think a lot of people had concerns with the Packers and how much they ran the football in that game, but they're also down 21 points in the first two quarters of the game. So it made things difficult to have, you know, just a positive game script. But I do think that the Packers have young, talented players. They need to get healthy, and they need experience. You can't do that overnight.
I love talking about the teams that are good, but I want to talk to you about a team that is bad, and that is Denver. How close are the wheels coming off there? You lose 70, you give up 70 points, and you lose by 50. You can't just put that away and look ahead to the next game. There's got to be something going on. Do you sense that? Is there something brewing in Denver where we might see this fall apart?
I think it's hard to look at, like, the mentality of things just because Sean Payton is obviously a new head coach there and someone that in that press conference after the game was visibly upset about any reporter questions on the 70 points given up and all those different things. And rightfully so. Like, there's got to be a lot of frustration in that locker room beyond the talent of the roster, beyond the, you know, offensive and defensive design. The frustration mentally in the locker room has to be something. The emotional impact of a 70-point game is tough. The other piece of it is they're one of the worst pass rushing units in the NFL. Like, they cannot create pressure. Against the Raiders in week one, who arguably have one of the worst offensive lines in the league, couldn't create pressure. Week two, they couldn't create pressure. And then obviously against the Dolphins, they're getting the ball out fast. That makes things more difficult, but still, like, never getting pressure on Tua Tagovailoa is just always going to make this thing difficult. So pass rush is something that you can specifically call out as an opportunity or a way to or an area of growth for Denver. And then the other side of the ball, you can't even measure the offense in a game where the defense gets up 70 points. Like, you can't. Like, the game script is so on fire by the time you hit the third quarter that you can't run the ball effectively. You have to go into one-dimensional offense, and that just makes things difficult.
The Jets, what's a realistic situation for their quarterback? They're kind of hampered by money. What is realistic for what Robert Saleh's got to do at that position? I know people don't want him to keep with Zach Wilson, but what realistically could be changed at that position for them?
It's tough, right? I wrote a piece for TheRinger.com recently about, you know, the different options that Robert Saleh has, and you could look to make a trade for Kirk Cousins or Ryan Tannehill or Baker Mayfield. All of those situations, I think, are bad for two reasons. One, it's going to cost you, right? It's going to cost you something in the cap, and it's going to cost you draft capital. Two, do those quarterbacks even get you over the hump?
Right.
Like, is the best case scenario with a Kirk Cousins in New York losing in the divisional round? Like, is that what you want? Just for Aaron Rodgers to come back, maybe come back, and then be in the same situation again where maybe Aaron Rodgers is a team, that, you know, a guy that can get you the divisional round, maybe get you the AFC championship. But, like, I don't know. Like, I think that what Joe Douglas and maybe even what ownership is saying is like, dude, let's just ride with Zach Wilson. We drafted this guy, and if he plays terribly, let's go get a top pick. Because here's what happens with Aaron Rodgers out. That pick they traded for Aaron Rodgers no longer is a first-round pick if he doesn't play the rest of the season. It becomes a second-round pick. Giving them that first-round pick back puts them in a position where they can pursue a Caleb Williams, a Drake May. This quarterback class upcoming is very, very good. Why trade for a quarterback that's marginally, not marginally, but even significantly better than Zach Wilson, or go sign a quarterback that's marginally better than Zach Wilson, when if you continue to trot this guy out, you're probably only going to win two or three more games. And at that point, you are in a position to go get a Caleb Williams or a Drake May that doesn't have to start next year if Aaron Rodgers does come back, but can start next year if Rodgers' career is indeed over.
That you are the first person I have heard bring this up. That is a brilliant point. That is an excellent point. That this draft class coming in is very, very good. Why sacrifice that for a situation where you might just win a handful more games? That is very, very. I didn't even include that angle, but you're 100% right.
The argument against it is, you know, there are players on this team that want to win now.
Sure,
and,
sure.
And you could argue that there are players offensively and defensively that are good enough to compete on a playoff competitive roster with a good quarterback. Not even like an Aaron Rodgers level quarterback, just a good quarterback. But my opinion is you have to communicate to those players that we're not going to, you know, this season is not a lost season. We're going to get better. We're going to do all these different things. But the fastest path to a Super Bowl for the New York Jets is not to go sign Kirk Cousins. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Right. Speaking of quarterbacks, Joe Burrow, what did you see Monday night? Where do you think is there a decision that Zach Taylor has to make here about Joe Burrow? I mean, he's a competitor. I get it. But what did you think of him Monday night?
I'm scared, man. I'm scared. Like, I get that he's a competitor. I get that going to 0-3 essentially puts them in a position where playoffs are so unlikely, especially in an unloaded or a loaded AFC, that you almost hang up the cleats if you go 0-3. But it's hard to watch. I'm scared to watch him because
yeah.
He's one quick movement in the pocket from losing that Achilles. We've seen this over and over and over again when players or quarterbacks specifically have calf injuries that they're nursing, or even Kevin Durant nursing a calf injury. You are one sudden movement away from losing the season. And is that what the Bengals want? Would you not much rather have Joe Burrow, you know, get healthy so that you can look ahead to next season and feel better about it? Maybe. But, like, I don't know. I'm not in the room. I don't know what the doctors are saying. I don't know what Burrow's actually feeling. I think right now it's hard to watch this offense because he can't physically move out of the pocket, and that makes them so much more one-dimensional than they want to be. Now, I respect the competitor in Joe Burrow, and, like, this team is, like, another team that can be Super Bowl competitive when he's fully healthy. It's just a scary thought thinking he's going against Tennessee this week in Nashville. Vrabel knows what's going on here. Like, I don't want to see Burrow go down with an Achilles injury just because he's trying to be competitive. That just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about the Dallas Cowboys because everybody asks about the Dallas Cowboys. Trayvon Diggs, I know this is going to hurt, but is this a similar story? We feel like Dallas has these great games, these great moments. We sort of wonder what this would lead to. And then there is this game that kind of comes out of nowhere. We go, yep, there you go. That's the game. We kind of know, all right, realistically, where are they at? How do you see where Dallas is now? They started off so strong.
There's no trap games in the NFL. That's more of a college football thing. But I do feel like there is some trap game stuff to the Cardinals right now, just because it's been underrated how much this team is playing for Jonathan Gannon. I know there were a lot of jokes in the offseason. I made a lot of jokes in the offseason about how he's motivating these players and some of his antics, you know, in these meetings and stuff. But, like, the first half of both their week one and week two games were awesome. Like, they come out fired up. Now, do they have the talent necessary to win in the second half? Mostly not. That's why they lost obviously to the Giants in week two. But they came out, punched the Cowboys in the mouth, and the Cowboys weren't ready for it. Like that's what happens in college football in these trap games where they come out, punch in the mouth, and you don't have enough of the resources left to pull off a two-possession, three-possession comeback. So I think it says more about the Cardinals, honestly, than it does say about the Cowboys. I still think the Cowboys are an uber-talented team. Losing Trayvon Diggs is going to hurt, but as long as they have Dak, Micah Parsons, CeeDee Lamb, like these stars of the NFL, I do think they're going to be a deep playoff competitive type of team.
Austin Gale, The Ringer, joining us, Talk NFL. Appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you so much. You guys do good work over there. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you.
You got it. Austin Gale joining us on our Progressive Guest Line, talking some football. We will get to the games this weekend, every matchup. We'll give you our what we call our value kind of guide. It's not who we think is going to win or whatnot. It's just, is this game worth your time? What value can you get out of these two teams playing? And it's not always the best teams playing the best teams. Sometimes we find some diamonds in the rough. But I'm with him on Joe Burrow, man. I really am. And this is saying that from a guy that has got a team in the division that would benefit greatly if Burrow was out for the season. But I don't want that. I mean, listen, this is the fandom in me that does, but the sports analyst guy that's in me doesn't want that. I don't want to see Burrow out of this league. The league is better when he's in it. It's better when he's playing. We always sort of laud the competitive nature of an athlete. We always kind of go, yeah, he's a fighter. He's a winner. Look at him out there. But there is a cautiousness to it that has to come, right? And I'm with him. Like Monday night, if Joe Burrow went down and didn't get up or went down like Aaron Rodgers did where he got up and then went right back down, you wouldn't have been surprised at all. You knew what he was dealing with when he went out there. And he's right. It happens all the time. These calf injuries turn into Achilles, and next thing you know, you're done for the season. If you're the Bengals, again, we don't know exactly what the diagnosis is, and we're not in the private meetings between the doctors and Joe Burrow. But if it is indeed still a hobble around injury, just sort of keep protected, you might see a game where Joe Burrow doesn't get back up and he's gone for the year. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.